Heading to CBC? Make sure to stop by booth 1989 to chat with the Brewbound team, check out our live podcast recordings, and find out about Brewbound's upcoming events. Have news to submit ahead of the show? Head to brewbound.com/submitnews to let us know about your latest updates.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of the Brewbound podcast presented by BevNet, where we bring you interviews with some of the most well-known figures throughout the beer industry. Today is Thursday, June 13th. My name is Chris Frenari. I'm joined by my co-host, Brewbound news editor, Justin Kendall.
Only slightly broken and bruised.
Are you sore? Did you take an ibuprofen yesterday?
My right arm is like reverberating.
From your three tosses in the bullpen?
No, it's from all the rips I was taking in the batting cage.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we're at the Beer Institute meeting in St. Louis. We'll get to that in a second. We'll tell you all about what we're learning, and we'll tell you all about some of the fun times that we've had here as well. We're basically, we're in a hotel, the Hyatt Hotel, which is like pretty much underneath the arch.
Yeah.
Like you can't get any closer to the arch than where we are.
That makes my hands like get all sweaty.
Why, the arch?
Yeah, I don't know why. I went over
what are you,
to
like
it.
A part of the X-Men or something?
I feel like it, man. Maybe it's the stainless steel of it that's like attracting me to it, or the metal in my arm.
All right, so we'll get to the Beer Institute meeting in a second. But first, we got to go on a little rant, because Justin and I had separate but similar experiences over the weekend. And it's craft brewers playing restaurateur. And I have thoughts. I know Justin probably has some thoughts, but here's the thing. Basically, there's a lot of breweries out there now that are expanding into second and third locations, and oftentimes those locations are restaurants, basically. They're not just tap rooms where you come get a sample or a pop-up beer garden where you're drinking a pint outside in the sun. These are full-blown restaurants. They do have some brewing components, but the restaurant is the focal point, and I feel like that's not their core competency. Restauranting is not their core competency. And I had a bad experience. Justin had a pretty mediocre experience. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was at a fairly new brewery tap room that I went to with my girlfriend, and we wanted to have dinner. We'd been out drinking at one of the beer gardens, and we decided, why not take it inside, you know, get some dinner before we, you know, call it a night. And we go and we're told it's a 45-minute wait, and that's fine. You know, we have a couple of beers at the bar, and we wait and we wait and we wait, you know, and we wait some more. And finally, you know, our time gets called, and we go up there, and they send us to a roof deck. And I was like, okay. And I was like, yeah, we're here for dinner. And the guy looks at me and he's like, yeah, it's open seating. You can get food up here, but, you know, you'll have to find your own seat. And it's packed. It's like super crowded because it's a nice day in Boston. And I'm like, okay, well, what about dinner? Like, where can we go to get dinner? And they're like, well, you can go to the second floor. And I was like, all right.
So that's where you were supposed to be.
That's where we were supposed to be. And you can tell when you go down and you tell the hostess, we're like, oh, we've been waiting for dinner, and we were just sent down here from the roof deck after waiting for 45 minutes. They like send us up when we were apparently not supposed to go up there. And you can just tell on their face that they're like, oh, not again.
It happened again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you look around and there are empty tables everywhere.
So clearly some kinks need to be worked out there.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of communication. Like, it seemed unclear, you know, I think I was pretty clear in stating that we were here to eat, and
we're looking for a table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I figured that's what the 45-minute wait was for a table.
Yeah.
And apparently not, you know?
So you get into the room, all of the tables are empty, which clearly, it's not like there was some mass exodus out of the second floor.
No. So there's no way.
So communication issue, attention to details, and that's really what it boils down to. Now, my experience is, you know, I walk into the brewery, I'm the only, or the brewery restaurant, I'm pretty much the only Warriors fan in Boston trying to watch the, like, legitimately watch the NBA finals. And people want to have it on, sure. but it's not their team. I get there an hour early before tip-off, order a couple beers, order some food. I'm positioned perfectly in front of a TV. I ask the bartender, hey, are you going to put the NBA Finals on? And he says, yeah, I don't think that should be a problem. And I said, great. Now just tell me if I need to move. If I need to move and relocate, I'll go wherever. I just want to be positioned near the TV. I'm going to sit there all night, drink beer, and watch the game, the whole game. And
that's a big tab.
Yeah, that's a big tab. And he goes, oh, well, we got 30 TVs. You know, I don't think it's going to be a problem. And I was like, all right, well, famous last words. And yeah, sure enough, you know, game comes on. All the TVs in the building change over to the NBA Finals. The Red Sox are playing, but the Red Sox stink. They're barely a 500 ball club right now. It was 4-0 Tampa Bay in the bottom of the eighth at this point. So the Red Sox are doing nothing. And we're watching, you know, first couple minutes of the basketball game, and all of a sudden, the Red Sox change on the one TV in front of where I'm sitting. Not any other TV in the building.
Help me understand this. Like, so were they playing the Red Sox on the TV before?
Yes.
Okay. And then they switched to the game.
All the TVs switched to the NBA Finals.
And then all of a sudden,
only the TV in front of me switched back to the Red Sox.
What?
And I'm the only guy wearing a hat. And I literally was like, come on. Like, I'm the only one in here wearing a Warriors hat. And the guy's like, yeah. Goes and talks to the general manager, comes back and says, apparently this is a Boston sports only TV and we can't change it to anything else. And I was like, wrong answer. Wrong answer. Right answer is, I'm really sorry, man. My GM is telling me I can't change it back because we've got some people, but can I get you a beer? The game's almost over and then we're turning it. Or I've got two seats over here that I can relocate you to. Or literally anything other than, sorry, tough shit. So again, not the biggest deal in the world. And I'm like, well, that stinks. And then the GM comes over, oh, you have a problem? And I'm like, yeah, I do have a problem. I explain the situation to her. And she's like, well, would you like me to change it back? I'm like, well, not anymore. No, I'm leaving. Like, we're done here. I'm going to a bar that understands. And, you know, we walk into a bar, you know, maybe 10 minutes down the road. And they have four TVs in that bar. Three of them are on the NBA Finals. One of them is on the Red Sox. And, you know, it's the one TV that's like kind of in the middle. Like, it's the least desirable TV because they understand. Mm-hmm. They understand that the Red Sox are doing nothing.
Yeah, and this is sort of a critical time in the NBA Finals.
So, I mean, again, it's just like if you want to play restaurateur, okay. But, like, understand that there's a certain set of rules that restaurateurs get. And craft brewers, you don't get that. Just like you would be upset if you were a craft brewer and a restaurateur was like, this brewing thing is so easy. I'm going to open up a brewery. And then started pumping out crappy beer.
What I kind of feel like in hindsight, looking at my own experience, was the restaurant staff did everything to make it right. You know, and I wasn't looking for anything free. They brought over two free apps. You know, they were very attentive. And I almost feel bad for them because they're sort of trapped. They're trapped between two, you know, brewery experiences as opposed to, you know, we're just trying to run a restaurant here.
Right. Well, and there's making things right and there's trying to fix situations and problem solving in the moment. And then there's just not allowing it to happen to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I'm at is like, you shouldn't, like, these are the details that you can't overlook because like, consumers are just going to get tired of it and they're just going to go back to the restaurants because that's what they're familiar with. So that's my little rant on restauranting. If you're a brewery, if you want to do it, fine. But like, just know that like you're going into a world that like they pay attention to the smallest things because those things matter to the customer. Like we ordered food and we sat and stared at the food for 5 minutes and finally had to grab someone and say, can we get some silverware to eat this? Oh, yeah. It's like, well, yeah, of course I want a fork to eat my food with, you know? And it's like those are the little things. Like, sure, they're really great at pouring a pint of beer, you know, and how hard is that? But, like, come on. Like, do the little things right. Get it right the first time. Don't apologize. Then you don't have to apologize. Then you don't have to give away a free app. Then you don't have to explain something and get into some, you know, argument with a customer. Like, these are the things. I don't know. Just pay attention to the details. And then...
Or maybe hire somebody that
hire
will.
Someone from the restaurant world that knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So, to any of our on-premise operators that are out there, on-premise, not on-premise, on-premise, I hear you. Like, I get where your frustration is coming from now.
The tide is turning.
I don't know that it's turning. I just think, like, if I want to go drink a single brand of beer, I'll do that at the brewery. I don't need a restaurant there. Because mm-hmm. when I go to a restaurant, I just want to go out to the restaurant. And I want to have maybe a wine. I want to have... And that was the kicker, was some guy walked up next to me as this was all going down. And he's just like, ugh, I really want a cocktail. And I'm like, well, there's a bar next door. He's like, I know, but my friends are here. I'm like, if you want a cocktail, just walk next door. There's places for that.
You know, they also have beer there, too.
Yeah. Like, anyways, so that's it. Moving on, Beer Institute. We're in St. Louis. We've done all the St. Louis things.
We have.
We pet a Clydesdale.
In Busch Stadium.
In Busch Stadium. That's the most, is that the most St., that's peak St. Louis.
That's beyond peak St. Louis. That's, I don't know, are we minor leaguer?
We're in the farm system.
Yeah.
We toasted to August Busch III with a Budweiser in St. Louis. Three Sticks, as they call him.
82 years and looking like he's younger than me.
Yeah. He looks good. Maybe a couple tummy tucks and some kind of blood boy or something going on. But he looks good.
Not to mention he flew his helicopter there with a security detail.
That's the most impressive part. So August Busch III, 82 years old, flew his own helicopter. He flew his own helicopter to receive an award, the Jeff Becker Award from the Beer Institute for, what is it, service to the beer industry?
Yes.
And... I mean, I don't need to say anything. He flew his own helicopter to get an award. That's amazing. At 82 years of age.
Yes.
So that's that.
And he also has a big, big problem with marijuana.
He hates marijuana. We wrote about that a little bit.
It was like, I think I told you, it was like a 1970s dad giving you a talk about marijuana. Like, I don't like this marijuana.
That wacky tobacco. That's the devil's lettuce. That jazz cabbage.
Yeah, it was a little bit of reefer madness there.
Let's see, what else did we do? We took batting practice, and which is perfect. You mentioned this, like, perfect. We took batting practice and threw in the bullpen. We discovered that you can never throw batting practice to me.
I am not a pitcher.
But I can throw to you.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was great. I'm having a great time. We're staying underneath the arch.
This is probably... you got to give it to the Beer Institute. This is Anheuser-Busch, I guess, in this case, since they're the sponsor or host of this.
They are.
I mean, it's a hell of an experience.
Oh, and you want to know who put the Warriors game on for me?
Who?
Busch Stadium.
Yes, they were playing the Warriors game at your request.
At my request, on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
So if I can get a Major League Baseball stadium to change the TV, but I can't get a small brewery to change the TV, we have a problem. Anyways, so I don't want to bring up old dirty laundry there.
Dies hard.
No, that I'm never letting this one go. So we're having a great time at the Beer Institute, and we're also learning a little bit.
Yeah.
And we're also doing some real work here other than taking batting practice.
Yeah.
So maybe update us on... what's happened here?
So far, BI CEO and President Jim McGreevy's sort of given us the rundown on, you know, the big issues that they're working on. Craft beverage modernization, tariffs, aluminum pricing. We've heard from restaurateurs and convenience store operators who are explaining sort of the future of what they're going to be offering. And, you know, I guess for restaurants, big, and I'm guessing this is more big chain, it's all about takeout and delivery and the convenience of home delivery and how that's going to play in with alcohol, which a lot of folks have already tested out.
Well, and there was another interesting point from the gentleman who's with the Restaurant Association, and he had said that they're... are restaurants, I'm assuming chains, bigger chains, he didn't mention them by name, that are starting to do meal plans. Mm-hmm. So it was a pure like cash flow situation, kind of like the membership societies in beer, where you buy a certain amount of meals or you have a certain amount of credit up front. And if you're a repeat customer or you plan on going to these restaurants multiple times per month, you can get a meal plan.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like he compared it to being in college and having the dorm style points or whatever for the food hall.
Yeah.
So kind of the same thing, which I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, they're kind of taking a page out of the brewery membership playbook, if you will.
Yeah. Well, and I think he said that 63% of traffic is delivery and carry out or something to that effect.
Wow.
Which is
click and collect, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty substantial.
Malt Europe Malting Company is North American proud with premium grains from field to flavor. Our selections include base, specialty, and distillers malt varieties. Stop by our booth, 2143, at the Craft Brewers Conference in Vegas. Does your brewing software suck? We've heard it from thousands of brewers. Connect with Ollie today, and we'll buy out your current contract and hook you up with brewing software that doesn't suck. Visit booth 1685 at CBC or hit getollie.com/pod.
There's a ton going on.
Yeah.
Obviously, lots of talk on tariffs. And, you know, there was some late breaking news on Friday.
Narrowly averted.
Yes. So for now, President Trump has agreed to not enforce an escalating tariff on Mexico on all goods, not just beer, not just tequila, not just avocados, everything. And in exchange, Mexico is going to work to, I guess, slow the flow of immigrants into the U.S. And there's some kind of measures in place to revisit that in the next 90 days and to see how that's going. So we're not out of the woods yet, but for now, crisis averted.
Mm-hmm. Big win for everybody in the beer industry right now.
Yep. So that's primarily what we're doing here at the Beer Institute, is talking about these really high-level sort of macro issues.
Yeah, and we've yet to touch on a lot of others in the manufacturing, and even we're going to be talking about the weather today.
You can't have a beer conference without talking about the weather. It's going to be hot here in St. Louis today, so I don't know how that's going to affect our beer drinking.
What's the critical temperature that you need in order to drink a beer?
All right, moving on from the Beer Institute, but staying with Anheuser-Busch since we're in St. Louis. A bit of news there, a key exit, as it were. The vice president of Anheuser-Busch's Beyond Beer division, Randy Ornstein, has departed the company. He left last week. He sent a message to certain people in the division, as well as some of the wholesalers, letting them know. He wrote a post on LinkedIn, but he departed the company on June 4th. And the reasons behind his exit are still a little bit unclear. I was able to actually connect with Randy on LinkedIn, and I guess there's more to come, but he's kind of staying quiet for now. So we should hear more from Randy, but he was leading all their Beyond Beer stuff. So that includes, you know, Highball Energy. It includes, you know, brands like Cutwater. So anything that's not beer but kind of plays on the fringes, he was in charge of all the sales operations for the Beyond Beer division. So there is a replacement. Anheuser-Busch has not named the replacement, but they have identified a replacement, and that's expected to be announced later this month.
Hmm.
So
pretty interesting.
Yeah, pretty interesting indeed, because the Beyond Beer division is a pretty big focus area for Anheuser-Busch right now. And Randy was in the job for a little under a year. He'd been with Anheuser-Busch for many years in a variety of positions, mostly category management positions, working on the Walmart and Sam's Club business. But this was kind of like, you know, his baby, building up this Beyond Beer division. He spoke at our BevNet Live conference last winter. So I think he was primarily focused on the non-alcoholic piece of it. And obviously Cutwater's a recent acquisition. So, you know, maybe hadn't quite gotten around to that. So he was primarily doing the Teavana and the Highball business.
Well, doesn't AB have a stated goal of making, what, a quarter of their portfolio non-alcoholic by a certain date, 2021
low,
or 2025?
Low or no alcohol. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting times for the Beyond Beer division, and we'll see what's next. And finally, before we get to our interview with Bill, just a couple quick stats to share. So we just poured it on this week with the Nielsen and the IRI data, but just a couple things that really jumped off the page at me for, you know, as we enter this summer selling period, you start to think about, hey, you know, what trends should I be watching? Where are things headed? Right now, beer sales, total beer sales, volume sales are up about 0.5% through mid-May, May 19th. And dollar sales are up 2.8% for just the whole category of beer. But, you know, if you kind of dive into the numbers, what's really driving that growth is not traditional beer, it's hard seltzer. And if you look at some Nielsen data through about April 20th, the hard seltzer category itself is up like 150%. And there are some brands that are doing really, really well. Most notably, White Claw. And excuse me, Nielsen says sales are up 193% through April 20th. But White Claw, made by Mark Anthony Brands, gangbusters. Their variety pack volume sales up 320% through May 19th, according to IRI. Their Black Cherry up 308% through May 19th, according to IRI. And then Boston Beer's Truly Mixed Berry Pack, 604%, up 604%. So, and then you look at, you know, some of the traditional beer brands, domestic and light beers, both down about 4 or 5%. You look at some very large craft brands like Blue Moon, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, Shinerbach, Lagunitas IPA, those were all down through May 19th. So traditional beer kind of hurting, and hard seltzer picking up the slack.
Only two of the top 10 craft brands increased volume sales through May.
So it's interesting times out there.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. So if you're, you know, looking for sales this summer and you're a restaurant, you're a bar, maybe think about some hard seltzer.
It's not a bad plan.
That's where
when you see that those volume numbers,
that's where the consumers are heading. One other area where consumers are heading, non-alcoholic beer. Health and wellness. And that's part of the reason why hard seltzer is up, because it is part of that health and wellness trend. Well, we've got a guy, Bill Schufelt, the co-founder of Athletic Brewing, that's right smack in the middle of the health and wellness trend on the podcast today. We caught up with Bill during the Craft Brewers Conference earlier this year. And if you've been reading Brewbound over the last 6 to 12 months, you've probably seen the Athletic Brewing name on the site. You've probably seen some news hit your inbox from Athletic. They're a Connecticut-based craft brewery making nothing but non-alcoholic beer. Bill spent 12 years as a hedge fund manager before deciding to become an entrepreneur. And it was when he was doing that job that he had dozens of late nights and early mornings that really forced him to approach alcohol in a different way. He had to pretty much cut back his alcohol consumption altogether, but he still wanted to drink craft beer and he wanted an alternative. And that led him to launching a non-alcoholic craft beer brand so that he could still maintain a healthy lifestyle and be more productive and alert throughout the day. And so we talked to him about that experience, going from being a craft beer drinker to basically being abstinent at this point, where he sees non-alcoholic beer going in the future. And we just get his general thoughts on what the occasions are for non-alcoholic beer and where all these health and wellness beverages are going. All right, here he is, Bill Schufelt. Chris Fornari here for Brewbound. I'm joined by my co-host, Justin Kendall. And today we have Bill Schufelt. Did I say that right, Bill?
Yep.
Schufelt?
Yeah, Schufelt.
Schufelt. He is the founder of Athletic Brewing. He's a BevNet Live attendee, a Brewbound Live attendee, a Pitch Slam contestant. Were you a BevNet Live Pitch Slam contestant as well?
I was not cannabis forum attendee.
You were a cannabis forum attendee?
Just always continuing the education.
So a friend of BevNet and first time on the Brewbound podcast. Welcome.
For sure. First time, long time. First, I just wanted to say thank you to you guys for you guys and your colleagues at BevNet. Just what a resource you are for people in my shoes starting a company. The amount of help and information you guys have given John and I over the past few years is super helpful. I mean, really digesting your content for 5+ years now and attending your conferences. So thank you. Psyched to be here.
Yeah. So Athletic Brewing, for our listeners who maybe aren't familiar, is a brand of non-alcoholic craft beer. You guys are out of Connecticut. Tell us, you know, your backstory, how you decided upon starting a dedicated non-alcoholic craft brewery and how it's going so far, because you guys are still pretty new.
Yeah, still just under 1 year on the market. Seems super new, but we're 4+ years in the planning. So definitely well thought out. I've never had aspirations to be an entrepreneur, never thought I'd own a business, especially a food or beverage business. I did love craft beer. I went to college in Vermont. I'd spent the prior 12 years of my life in the hedge fund world. And really, as I upgraded my life in fitness, health, really needed to be alert around the clock in my hedge fund life, alcohol just fit in an increasingly decreasing amount of those occasions. But I really miss craft beer. And there was very little at bars and restaurants. I still went to tons of work dinners, love going to sports bars, love playing sports. And craft beer fits more or less in some of those occasions, but there's really a big void in an adapting healthy and active life. And that's when I really started to tinker and think if it was possible to make a good non-alcoholic craft beer. The moment really hit me when I was on vacation with my wife and there was nothing between water, soda, coffee, and like sugary virgin cocktails. I just couldn't believe with how great the craft beer world is that all these occasions were being missed by the craft beer world. I saw the positive impact it had on my life. Me being sober, being much healthier, just being more focused at work, and really got down to work. I spent 2 years planning the business in the background, been a 5-year member of the Brewers Association, attending these conferences and your conferences.
Yeah.
And in the midst of all that was when I teamed up with John Walker, who's our co-founder and head brewer, incredibly talented brewer who, out of about 200 people I talked to, was literally the only person on the planet who saw potential in this idea. And then, yeah, we got to home brewing in a warehouse in Connecticut. John had been living in Santa Fe with his family. They moved across the country.
Wow.
And once we got a product we really liked, we built the brewery around it.
So let's start there with the product itself. You know, and I'm pretty unfamiliar with the various ways that you can actually achieve a non-alcoholic beer like you have, but there are a number of different paths to making a non-alcoholic beer, correct?
For sure. And John and I kind of started with the baseline that if any of the traditional technologies worked to make good non-alcoholic beer, one of these very well-funded mega breweries or craft breweries would already be making it that way. And so we started with the baseline. We were going to go back to the textbooks and really dig into process and see if we could make a fully fermented beer to under 0.5%. Essentially brewing a super sessionable IPA. The key to us was not having a de-alcoholization step in our process.
And why is that?
In every other process, no matter how gentle the boiling is or the boiling, filtering, reverse osmosis, distillation, we could taste the earmarks of the process in the final product. And we really wanted to try to make a product where we could fully ferment to under 0.5. And through hundreds of batches of homebrew, a lot of textbook research, we got to that point where we brew a fully fermented beer that is done fermenting at under 0.5.
Wow. What's it been like bringing a product like that to market at a time when there is increasing interest in moderation? But really, the market for non-alcoholic beer is relatively non-existent still in the U.S.
For sure. It was super sleepy. From 1990 to 2017, there was literally no new entrants into the beer world. That's when Bravis Brewing in California launched their non-alcoholic. And then a few of us have started to build up this community around non-alcoholic beer. It's been totally flatlined for the past 15 years in our survey work prior to launch, everyone pretty much said it's due to the quality and stigma around the category. Right now, there's about 40% of American adults who average 0.1 drinks or less per week. And the non-alcoholic beverage world is upwards of $300 billion market per year. That's about 3 times the size of the total beer world. And we really thought that there's a huge market out there that the beer world's missing. The more we dug into this category and looked around us in the modernizing, mindful, healthy world, it wasn't that there's anything wrong with craft beer. There's nothing wrong with spirits. They're incredible products reaching great occasions and no doubt have an awesome place in the Friday, Saturday nights, Thursday nights, happy hours, bars. But there might only be 10 to 20% of life's occasions where alcohol really makes sense. We really want to reach drinkers and non-drinkers alike on all those other occasions and incorporate a complex beverage into a healthy lifestyle.
So who have you found are the typical athletic consumers?
Well, the name athletic is just a positive spin on a typically stigmatized category. We want someone in a bar or restaurant to be able to say, I'm making a healthy, positive choice with this beer. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. And that definitely plays well. We've seen the wide-ranging success of other healthy and active beers regardless of the taste profile. We think this provides a taste profile without any compromise in the hands of those people. We've been surprised at how low the education hurdle actually is for our product. That was my biggest worry launching this product.
But what's the demo? Is it like 20-somethings? Is it 30-somethings? Is it 40-somethings? Like, is it male? Is it female? Like, who is it?
Yeah, it's much younger than I ever would have thought. I never would have thought we'd sell a beer to someone under 30 years old. And the millennial and Gen Z generations just get it. There's real career risk, social media risk around drinking in all sorts of occasions. And being drunk in public is very quickly out of style, if not already out of style. Yeah, I'd say our target demographic is really the 25 to 40-year-old professional. They're probably a weekend warrior, do Barry's Bootcamp, SoulCycle, probably have a couple kids. We get probably 25 to 50 emails a day of customer feedback of people who are excited to find something that meets those occasions. A lot of these people are young parents and drinkers who just want to feel good on Saturday morning when they're chasing their kids around, or they might be an Ironman athlete who's got 2 months of training, like a 2-month training block, but still wants all the experiences and social.
You talked about the building an occasion for this product, and there are plenty of occasions that you identified in your own, you know, life, or I should say previous life as a hedge fund manager, you know, where you wanted to be alert, or you probably more accurately needed to be alert on a day-to-day basis, and alcohol was cutting into that. But beyond just, you know, general day-to-day alertness, where do you see non-alcoholic beer going in terms of occasions? Like, is it something that pairs with the end of an athletic event? Is it something that people will use as the designated driver? Like, what are the occasions for non-alcoholic beer that you see in the future?
Yeah, I think first, those traditional use cases like designated driver or medical reasons, young parents, all those reasons, I think the category is now going to turn to a look for quality. And I think that's enough alone to build the business off of, really. In our eyes right now, the craft beer world is doing an incredible job of touching all occasions through all different beer varieties, but on a very horizontal plane and not really reaching new consumer groups. We're trying to really unlock all, like, a whole new vertical for the beer category. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who currently drink one or less craft beer per week. And we think there are a lot of occasions there. Yeah, like you said, it could be young parents, it could be weeknight meal pairings, post-workout, if they want the hydration, the electrolytes, potassium, without the diuretic effects of alcohol. Could be going to the beach or a state park with your kids. You don't need a liquor license for any non-alcoholic beer. There are really a ton of occasions out there. It's funny, most people say, well, what's the point? Where does that fit? And to me, it's almost the opposite. Where does alcohol actually fit versus, like, there's so many more beer occasions out there.
How do you build that messaging at a time when you're effectively fighting 7,400 other breweries that are saying kind of the opposite, right? They're out there promoting their beers and saying, hey, there's an occasion for this wonderfully crafted, you know, double IPA that I made, and it's super hazy. And you're kind of trying to say, like, actually, I think the opposite. Like, you don't need that. You need this non-alcoholic beer so that you can wake up tomorrow morning.
We really hope more brewers are coming online in the non-alcoholic category. We think with how big the non-drinking population currently is, like we heard at Brewbound in Santa Monica, Eric Ottaway on stage said he wouldn't be surprised if non-alcoholic beer went to 10% plus of the beer market. The total IPA market is 5 to 7% of the beer market. So that floats 5,000 breweries. I think there's a lot of room in this category, and we really welcome that for all the new occasions.
And it's going to require more entrance into non-alcoholic beer in order to service the demand or even build up interest altogether?
Well, we're definitely excited about that for all the people out there talking about coming into the category. We've actually been really pleasantly surprised how low the education hurdles are. Last summer, we sponsored 65 athletic events, and we're on pace to sponsor about 80 this year. The key partnerships there are we're sponsoring 7 Spartan races nationwide, the National AVP Volleyball Tournament, Northeast Ironman races. It's been incredible. At the finish line, we're there with an enormous cooler, hand out 1,000 beers, and people hang out and taste the beer. And it really is a you have to taste it to believe it category and see where it fits in your life. And it's pretty incredible how quickly the light bulb goes on and people just hang out and tell you all the occasions they'll be consuming beers.
So it doesn't make you nervous that Heineken is entering the space with a $50 million marketing budget or Brooklyn's looking at getting into it, or Deschutes, or any number of you know, large-scale craft breweries?
We're extremely excited about all three, Heineken especially, with that marketing budget. And we really think they're very complementary beers. We're currently distributed side-by-side in a couple portfolios with Heineken, and both beers perform and turn better than the old category used to. Yeah, we're really excited about Brooklyn. Eric, since meeting him at Brewbound Live, has been an incredible mentor and advisor. He welcomed John and I down to Brooklyn. It's stewards like that in the craft beer world who do an incredible job leading us into the next generation of craft. And we really couldn't be more helpful to have them like by our side as we try to tackle this new category.
So when you see all these products coming into the space, and you start to think about the new consumers that are gravitating towards these products and seeking them out, and you know, in my mind, it doesn't matter if it's non-alcoholic or a kombucha or, you know, really anything that speaks to health and wellness or functional. What does that sort of suggest for the existing players if they're not paying attention to what's going on underneath the surface in this sort of underworld of health-conscious consumers that don't want a double IPA?
Oh, I think they definitely still do. I get at least 10 emails a day asking us to make a hazy New England non-alcoholic, and we are 100% doing that. And we have a West Coast double hop in front of you here. We are very much not a soapbox company whatsoever and have all the heart in the world for craft beer. Out of our 15 employees, I'm the only one who doesn't drink, and everyone loves craft beer. John's a widely accomplished craft brewer. I'm actually much more positive on the overall craft category than I think a lot of people are. I know the headlines of stagnant growth and negativity get a lot of clicks, but the craft beer market's growing off a much bigger base right now.
Right.
And that doesn't even include the craft-like numbers either.
I guess I just think more in terms of the way that these businesses are set up. And you've got, you know, 7,400 different craft breweries out there. The vast majority of them are not paying attention to the consumers that you're catering toward. And, you know, I think that the vast majority of these owner-operators are probably not as health conscious for themselves. You know, they're not out running up a mountain in Boulder before the craft brewers conference, or eating a salad every single day, or abstaining from alcohol. These are people who, you know, enjoy indulgence, and yet we're living in a time where everything is kind of shifting the other direction.
So I definitely do crush a lot of ice cream. I'm probably on a 4,000 or 5,000 calorie a day diet, so it's workouts to balance the inputs. But as I said, I am much more positive on the craft beer world. I was up in Portland, Maine a few weeks ago, and like, there's nothing better than communities like that where there are 4 or 5 great breweries in a single industrial park. And people love traveling around to visit those breweries. And there are plenty of occasions for those beers also. And I think that category is going to keep growing as well. I mean, there aren't nearly as many craft breweries as wineries in the U.S. And I think craft is an increasingly premium category in the U.S., and there's some beers that time after time again get fingered as the non-alcoholic beer in our blind taste test that still have a ton of market share. So there's a lot of hope there for craft, and they just have to speak to it. And on the other side of the coin, I think brands like Dogfish and Lagunitas and Sufferfest are really doing an awesome job speaking to the customer at the lower alcohol levels too. I think there's just so much more of the ABV range to unlock here that I think it's going to be an exciting few years ahead. And like, out of all this quote-unquote stagnation negativity, I think craft might actually be in for a few explosive years, which I think will really catch people off guard.
So you see it as a completely new occasion?
Yeah, I think there are probably 3 or 4 days a week to unlock, really. Or, I mean, say someone's going to their local brewery and previously they'd only have 1, maybe 2 beers because they have their car with them. You could mix in anywhere from like a 0% to 3% beer and have 2 more beers throughout that occasion. Or it could be something for the whole group to drink more of. And I mean, it's just like one small sliver of occasions.
So how do you become that occasion? Or do you become that occasion?
Yeah, we weeknight meal pairings are huge for us. Like people, like Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays are enormous e-commerce days for us. And yeah, as I said, I think craft beer does great with like the 20% of occasions where alcohol makes sense. But like even like the workplace cafeteria, there are whole new markets out there that we're just not touching.
Yeah. You're in a unique position because you're non-alcoholic that
you are able to sell your product online and anybody can buy it.
It's incredible. Beer essentially comes right off our canning line and goes into boxes after QC and goes right out the door. And a lot of places in the tri-state area, they're getting beer that was canned the day prior, the next day in the mail. But what's really nice is if someone's dying for our beer in California, they can get that beer within 5 days. And it's been great to get to know our customers, get to provide beer directly to them. And we totally underestimated what a channel it would be.
How big of an opportunity is e-commerce, not only for your business, but for the non-alcoholic beer segment itself?
It has a lot of challenges for sure.
Weight.
Yeah, weight, packaging, shipping costs. Shipping costs are enormous. Mm-hmm. And we have an incredible head of e-commerce who has really iterated, listened to customer feedback. And our e-commerce business was basically nothing through the first 3 months. And he joined our team and has basically been responding real time to customer feedback. And it pretty much grows 50% every month.
So speaking of that direct-to-consumer sales, you guys operate a tasting room. What's it like to be a non-alcoholic beer company operating a tasting room?
It's fun. It's definitely out there. A lot of people come just out of curiosity. But we definitely try to make it a fun experience, hosting trivia nights. We did a Final Four night with a basketball hoop in there on Saturday. And we always have four different beers in there that you can't get in the outside world, too. So for people who have been drinking non-alcoholic beer for the past 5, 10, 30 years, they come from very far away. Anywhere from like Maryland, Philadelphia, Ohio, Vermont, like just for a day trip, which is really cool to... It's the thesis of why we built it. We hoped they were out there, and it's unbelievable to see them show up in person and get to hear their feedback on the beers.
So you're super optimistic about where this category or this piece of the category can go, but...
The total category, yeah.
Yeah, what are the headwinds, though? I mean, what are the biggest challenges for your business? I mean, most obvious to me seems to be just, you know, creating awareness for non-alcoholic beer and you know, the occasions that it serves. But what other headwinds are there?
I think a huge one is quality and regulatory. Non-alcoholic beer is definitely no joke. We thought just making the beer would be the biggest challenge, and it was maybe 30% of the challenge. The regulatory world is very tough in non-alcoholic, but the food safety is even more scary. You don't have alcohol as a preservative. We invested very heavily in our lab right from day one, pretty much the size of like a large regional brewery. We have a super talented head of our lab who's a trained microbiologist, but we also have a master's in chemistry on our brewing team as well. One of the biggest risks is that bad quality product is out there in the marketplace, or the category just gets flooded with low-quality products and turns people off, and there's negative word of mouth. And because if there's a negative experience, people are 9 times as likely to share that as a positive one.
Yeah. Well, that sounds exactly like the same fears that craft brewers have had for years.
For sure, yeah. But it's just much more sensitive populations with non-alcoholic also. It could be a pregnant woman, or it could be a recovering alcoholic drinking the product, so... We take quality super seriously right from day one, but yeah, we got some higher education and have a buttoned up food safety plan. So,
and what is the shelf life of a non-alcoholic product after it's been flash pasteurized or gone through a process of pasteurization process?
Actually, flash has its own risks because that's not the end of the process. So flash doesn't really do it for non-alcoholic products, which was another challenge we discovered. So it's interesting to innovate this category at a budget size of ours. But yeah, it's tested to 6 months right now, and it should be upwards of a year fairly soon. So yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
How much of your business is on-premise?
That's really been our best marketing tool, just because it's such a lower cost of trial for people.
Okay.
They don't have to buy a $10 six-pack, and they can try any one of the flavors at restaurants. We've actually never lost a tap handle once it goes on tap. It's just a matter of convincing restaurants to put it on tap. Up until about 4 months ago, it was all me doing the sales. So since we've gotten that out of my hands, there's been a lot higher on-premise success. But
don't sell yourself short. You're a pretty decent salesman.
It's, I was doing a lot of events was my real specialty. Run the event, get behind the booth, and then talk about the beer and essentially give out free product, not actually sell it.
No, it's always easier when you're giving it away, right?
For sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, to Justin's point, there is, I mean, half of the business, if not more, on premise that's, you know, available to you, especially in non-alc. But it seems like the sort of lowest hanging fruit is that in-home, take-home occasion right now. Weekday, I'm not going out, I'm watching Netflix, and I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to be inebriated.
So, yeah, the grocery stores and more natural products grocery, like Whole Foods, Wegmans, Trader Joe's, have been huge accounts for us. That's the modern customer who it really speaks to in all occasions. And that's where, like, you're likely to fit it into your weeknight shopping routine. But yeah, off-premise liquor stores have been very high turnover as well.
So, what do you do when you go to an event like the opening reception at the Craft Brewers Conference and there's no non-alcoholic beer available? I imagine as an entrepreneur, that would probably like eat you up inside because, you know, here's this perfect opportunity to have your beverage there and you can so plainly see it and yet nothing's happening.
For sure. It's like walking into a sports stadium and seeing 50,000 people, 10,000 of which would definitely try one of your beers if it was there. And it's just a slow road, but in the next 5-10 years, it's going to be everywhere and so ubiquitous, and there will be really high-quality non-alcoholics, and it'll be great. Now, I'm actually much more excited to be at all the events this year. It really, having John join our team and give us some real street cred in the craft beer world, someone who's won a few great American Beer Festival medals, and he's really been an incredible business partner in getting Athletic off the ground. Every recipe you taste of ours is entirely due to John, and we iterated the science together, and it's been a really fun road innovating it. But now it's really fun to walk into these events because the world has turned a bit, and craft brewers are super intellectually curious about the category.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this week for sure.
So I'm super curious on the margins of non-alcoholic craft beer because, you know, it does seem like there's probably some extra steps. You mentioned all the sort of quality control measures that you guys need to implement and some of the people that you have on your staff with advanced degrees in biochemistry. How do you make a product like this work and maintain a profitable business at, you know, 10, 11 bucks on the shelf?
Luckily, my career is very deep in finance, so it's something that I don't mind doing from time to time now that it's on my own terms, like diving into Excel on the weekends and spending some time with it. And John and I weren't shy about our beliefs in the business and contracting out ingredients well ahead, making oversized purchases where we could get good economies of scale right from the start. And we're really glad we did have that belief because now we can meet capacity for all of the Northeast and be sending beer nationwide through partners like Total Wine. But yeah, it's a lot of economies of scale from the start. We have an incredible investor team who believed in us and our product before we even had product to show them. But yeah, we're excited to say we're 100% independent. We're growing quickly. Non-alcoholic definitely has margin opportunities over regular alcoholic beer for sure. And it's something we're happy to share with our distribution retail partners for sure.
Was it hard to get investment in a non-alcoholic beer company that is being built from the ground up?
Well, not when you were a former hedge fund manager, right?
Well,
that's what I thought. And like, it's easy for people to talk about money, but when they actually need to write the check and tell their wife or their husband that it's for a non-alcoholic beer startup, the checks don't materialize as quickly as you would think, which was actually one of the biggest blessings because we worked really hard on this business in the background for 3 years before we launched. And we learned a lot about ourselves, about the company, about our mission, where we were going. And we found an incredible group of, like, all of them are small investors who support us authentically, pre-product, believe in the positive impact we're going to have with the product. And it's been really fun to take them along. But yeah, it was about 120 meetings.
So, you know, sort of a final question here for you. You know, for any of our listeners that are out there that are paying attention to the space, looking at the space, and maybe considering getting into it, what sort of advice would you have for them? They could be, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs that are just considering non-alcoholic as their own dedicated focus, or existing craft brewers that are thinking about adding a new product line. You know, what you've kind of run the gamut of all the hardships of getting a dedicated non-alcoholic brewery off the ground and dealt with the regulatory stuff, as we mentioned, and started to build an audience. What should they know if they're going to get into this space?
It's really all about, I mean, at least in our experience, I think some of the most important things have been quality and team. It's just not possible to start a small business if you don't love your team and have a real passion for what you're doing. If you can't be waking up at 3 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays excited about what you're doing, it's probably not the right move. But yeah, definitely team. Be ready for any conversation and be ready to listen. We've gotten a lot of seemingly coincidental interactions that have turned into huge business opportunities and huge mentors. We've had industry veterans come through and really contribute for 6 months and get a help out.
How about for brewers that are, you know, already successful in the alcoholic side and they're thinking that, you know, non-alcoholic might be something they want to dip their toes into?
Yeah, we are really excited to build the category alongside people. We think it's going to be a really durable trend and really unlocking new occasions for the craft beer world. So we hope more people do. Yeah, we would definitely just encourage quality and care for the product, not to rush into it. And there are definitely dangers associated with it.
It's been a real pleasure watching you get off the ground and see all the early success that you've had. 2019, how many barrels are we expecting out of you guys this year? I mean, you guys have grown quite a bit.
We do have some big goals. It's hard to put a firm number on it. But yeah, we did over 1,000 last year. And we were only on the market for 6 months. But yeah, we're hoping for 5 to 10 times that.
Wow. Well, that means 5 to 10 times more non-alcoholic drinkers than there were last year, let's say.
I'll try to actually sell some of them and not give them away at athletic events also.
Well, we wish you the best of luck and enjoy your CBC week as well.
Thank you guys very much. Really appreciate all your help.
Cheers.
Thank you.
All right, that was our interview with Bill. Quick takeaways, because we're already late for our Beer Institute meeting. Let's see. My top three are, 1, Bill's a very, very, very nice guy. Almost too nice.
Extremely diplomatic.
Extremely diplomatic, but very passionate about what he's doing. And I think he's onto something with non-alcoholic beer. 2, I didn't realize that there were a variety of ways to make non-alcoholic beer. And he's actually brewing it to be under 0.5% as opposed to de-alcoholizing it. And that changes the flavor. And there's some chemistry we can get into. Those are my 2 top takeaways. My 3rd is, you know, kind of the flip where he said there are more occasions where you should be thinking about a non-alcoholic product as opposed to an alcoholic product. And you don't really think about it like that, because we're inundated in the beer industry with, if you go to a theme park, that's a time for a beer. If you go to a baseball game, that's a time for a beer. If you wake up in the morning, it's time for a beer. It's always an occasion for beer. And what he's saying is the exact opposite. Actually, there's more occasions where you don't need beer. And that's what he's going after.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest takeaways from me was when he said there's 3 to 4 days of occasions to unlock and even new markets to enter, such as workplace cafeterias, which wouldn't even have entered into the realm of possibility in my mind.
Yeah. We were trying some non-alcoholic beers last night, the Heineken 0.0, and you know, I think there are always going to be people, particularly people in the beer industry, who say, you know, if I want to cut back on, you know, if it's that point of the night where I want to take it down a notch, I'll just go to a light beer. But there are plenty of people out there, probably way more people, who are looking to just abstain altogether, who don't want to wake up and have a headache, who, you know, have a variety of reasons for why they don't want to drink. And there hasn't been a product for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly where, Bill's living in the future.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. I think he's been sent back in time.
You think he's like a Terminator?
Yeah, he's a sophisticated craft brewer sent back in time to change our drinking habits.
I think he's got to go back a few more years. I don't know if 2019 was the right year to jump into. Maybe mid-80s or something like that, which I think is a script that maybe Bill should be thinking about writing.
We'll pitch that. No, I think you know, he's onto something. There's a whole group of drinkers, you know, younger millennials and Gen Z that aren't drinking as much.
And yeah, like even as I get older, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to drink tonight, but maybe I do want a not that I'm craving a non-alcoholic beer, but I'm craving something other than like a seltzer water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you did hand me a Miller Lite last night, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe August Busch was on to something too, 3-2 beer is, what did he say? He was singing the praises of 3-2 beer is beer you can drink all evening.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's beer you can drink all evening, Mr. Three Sticks, Athletic Brewing. I also, let's talk a little bit about how he's brewing this product, how he's making this product. Most companies that are putting out non-alcoholic products are doing a de-alcoholization process, stripping out the alcohol and also simultaneously stripping out some flavor. And what Bill sort of explained was that, he didn't want to do that because he tried so many different products that just fell short for him. And so he went about it a whole different way.
I wonder if there's a cost issue involved there because de-alcoholizer equipment is just so expensive. From my understanding from our conversations with Matthew from last week's podcast on Sleeping Giant, He's mentioned that because their deal with Seria Beverages and Keith Villa, I can't remember what he said the figure was, but it was, I want to say millions of dollars. I feel like I've had that same conversation with Dan Gordon from Gordon Biersch. So this de-alcoholizer equipment is really expensive.
Yeah. So maybe there's some creative spin there from Bill.
It could be, but I also understand his point. It's really cool that they are doing it 2.05 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
0.5.
And now I think the long-term challenge for any non-alcoholic brand, not just Athletic, but any non-alcoholic brand, is going to be convincing consumers that drinking a non-alcoholic product while you're out with friends or at any point is fine. Because right now, non-alc has a stigma. Non-alc beer has a stigma of being the product that you drink if you're in recovery or if you're, the designated driver. Like, there's not a positive association with non-alc right now. And that's going to be his biggest uphill climb, is convincing people, like, actually, it's, like, kind of cool to drink a non-alc. And finding those opportunities, whether it's, sponsoring the beach volleyball tournament or being at the Spartan events, and integrating the product into their lives is, I think, a really smart approach. One by one, hand-to-hand combat, out in the trenches, converting people just one day at a time. And it's going to take a really long time for that to happen. But I think he's going about it sort of the old school way, and that's the right way.
Well, and he's getting help too. I mean, it is a good time for Bill to be doing this, despite what I said earlier about going back in time. Because Heineken launching 00 with its ad campaign and these humorous commercials with, the guy drinking beer or drinking the non-alc beer behind the wheel or, in a boardroom or any of these places that you're not associating beer with or as the right time for that occasion. I think it's the right time for him, because he's getting help.
Well, one area where he needs a little bit more help is maybe from the Brewers Association, and that's by having an actual category at the GABF for non-alcoholic beer. That's by having non-alcoholic beer options available at some of their events. Was there a non-alcoholic brewery pouring at Savor? Was there, are there non-alcoholic breweries that you can easily find on the show floor at GABF? When you go to CBC, do they have a non-alcoholic beer option? Like, if they do, I don't see it.
I'm with you. I don't see it either.
And, I think that the Brewers Association could, be a big help to a company like Bill to help, it goes a long way to help somebody like Bill legitimize a category like the non-alcoholic space, because I think he's doing everything right. Like, he built a brick and mortar facility. He's brewing it to a certain specification. He's investing in quality control and QA, QC and all this stuff. So he's doing everything that an ordinary craft brewery would. The only difference is his product just doesn't have alcohol,
mm-hmm.
or it has less than 0.5% alcohol.
Yeah.
So I think the Brewers Association, and you might see this at some point, if they could get behind some of these products, I think that would be great for the industry too, because I don't want to go to CBC and just crush, you know, hazy 9%, you know, whatever's all night for 4 hours at some, you know, welcome reception at CBC.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to maybe just pace myself a little bit and have a non-alcoholic, throw a non-alcoholic beer in there.
It fits into the whole beer is the drink of moderation.
So
narrative that we keep hearing.
So that's our call out to any of the BA folks that may or may not be listening to the podcast. Let's help legitimize the non-alcoholic beer category for people like Bill. And I think there's a company maybe out of Chicago, Wellbeing Brewing.
Wellbeing, yep. There's a handful of companies out there that are taking a stab at this and trying to make a go.
Alcoholic, you know, traditional craft breweries are looking at the non-alcoholic space. Deschutes is one of those companies.
Brooklyn.
So, yeah, I think it'll probably take some time, like we've been saying, but let's legitimize the category. And on that note, let's legitimize the category even more by going and joining our friends at the Beer Institute, which, shout out BI, great event so far. And maybe we'll get a non-alcoholic beer to kick off the morning.
I hope so.
Yeah. All right, that's our show for this week, folks. Thanks for tuning in wherever you're listening. We are available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Libsyn, and SoundCloud. If you like what we're doing, please leave us a rating and a review and share the podcast with your friends. Drop us a line over on podcast@brewbound.com if you'd like to be featured or if you just want to share your thoughts. Thank you to our audio team, our guest, Bill Schufelt, and to all of our big, beautiful listeners out there in beer world. Catch us next week for episode 41, which features an interview with Brew Gentleman co-founder Matt Katase. Until then, cheers.
Cheers.